All right, well, we'll get started and people can join us as they come. Welcome to week two of the Enneagram. Anybody have any lingering questions or thoughts from last time that you wanted to ask about before we jump in? Okay, well, I thought we'd just review the theory a little bit to get us back in the swing of things. So the Enneagram believes, and we do too, that we are all given gifts by God. Yeah? Okay. And those gifts are things we usually like. We're usually very happy with our gifts. In fact, we like them so much that we can get addicted to them. As we try to offer our gifts every day to everybody that comes our way, we find that we can't do it perfectly. We're not received the way we want to be received. People don't appreciate the gift that we're bringing them the way we would like them to appreciate it, so we can become frustrated. When we become frustrated, we experience roadblocks on our spiritual journey. They become obstacles to get by when we're feeling frustrated by all this. We think that showing our gifts all the time will help us look good. We think that it will help us gain control over our lives and impress other people and impress us, ourselves, too. We feel good when we're giving our gifts. But because we're doing it obsessively, because we're getting addicted to them, we're diminishing our freedom and we're becoming compulsive about how we offer our gifts and how we want them to be received. The giving of the gift becomes more important than anything else. So the Enneagram helps us to identify our gift, but then also those compulsions that arise from the trying to give those gifts in ways that they may not be wanted, and gives us a grace then to help us get out of that vicious cycle and be aware of when that's happening so that we can make a better choice of whether we give our gift at that time, whether it's needed or wanted, and maybe to give it in a way that is more helpful and less clingy, which it can sometimes become. So that helps us to loosen our grip on our addiction or our compulsion, and we find the freedom to be the person that God created us to be. So that's kind of the underlying theory of all of this that we talked about last week, but I wanted to just kind of go over it again. So here are the numbers in brief. Kind of last week, hopefully you got maybe a glimpse at what might be your number. Anybody pretty sure they know their number at this point? Anybody have like one or two or three that they're kind of playing around with and they're not quite so sure? Okay. Well, this is kind of, if we look at our gift and our compulsion and our grace, because we said God gives us a gift, we turn it into a compulsion, and then God gives us the grace to get out of the compulsion. So for the one, their gift is goodness. Their compulsion is anger. Why? Because it's not good enough. It's never quite good enough. It's never perfect. And God's grace for the one is serenity to kind of just be okay with the not perfectness of their goodness. Number two is the gift of love. The two wants to give love everywhere and to everyone they meet, leading to a sense of pride. Look how loving I am. And then God will offer the grace of humility to try to get us out of that pridefulness. The three wants to be effective. And when the effectiveness isn't quite so effective, we'll deceive a little bit, cut a few corners, try to make it seem effective even if it's not. And God will give us the grace of truth to get out of that deceit and face what is. The four is gift is creativity. And we'll get into more of this as we get into each number. So don't worry about you don't get it all. I just want to give you an overview. The compulsion for the four is envy. Because somebody else is always more creative than I am. Somebody else always has it together better than I do. And God gives us the grace of equanimity. Feeling it's okay. We're all good. Number five, the gift is wisdom. And the compulsion is greed. I want more wisdom. I want more knowledge. I can never have enough. I need another degree. I need to read another book. I need to go to another class. I need whatever. I need. And the five's grace is to be detached from that, to let it go. Number six is faithful. When they get compulsion about it, they develop fear. Fear that others won't be faithful back. And it won't be safe to be faithful. And so God will grant the gift, the grace of courage. The seven loves joy. The seven is a joyful person and just wants to spread joy and share joy and have joy every moment of the day, to the point they become gluttonous about joy. Let's give me more joy. I got to have more. I got to have more. Whatever it is, I got to have more of it. And the grace is sobriety, to just calm down with that, not need so much, let it go. A lot of this is just letting go. The number eight, the gift is power. Power in the best sense, the power to make good things happen, to make justice happen. But the compulsion can be lust. Again, wanting more of it, wanting more power, power over people instead of power to empower. And the grace of innocence is what God gives the eight to overcome that. And finally, the nine, the gift of peace. The nine can be so peaceful that they practically go to sleep. So their compulsion is sloth. I don't have to do anything. I'm just going to sit here and be peaceful. And all is good. And that gets old sometimes. And so God gives the gift, the grace of action to that nine. So that's just a quick overview. We will go through each one with great detail. So the Enneagram helps us see what we're doing. How might this play out in everyday life? Well, let's eavesdrop on some conversations between a husband and a wife at the end of the day of work. You'll notice as we read these that the events in each of the three scenarios are exactly the same, but the reaction, the response of the wife in each case is quite different depending upon the number that they might be. So who would like to read the first? I'll read the husband. Who would like to read the first wife on the next screen? Somebody be wife number one. It doesn't hurt. It's easy. Okay, great. Okay, here we go. Hi, honey. How was your day?
Well, the committee chair didn't get back to me about the brochure. Now I'll be late with what they want me to do. The doctor never called about my test results. I don't think he likes me. I didn't have time to get the groceries, so we'll have to take the leftovers.
Okay. Anybody want to take a stab at what number that might be? I'm not going to tell you at this point anyway. No? Anybody? Anybody think that sounds like them? Okay, nobody wants to admit it, even if it does, right? Okay, who wants to read the second wife's response? Okay, thank you. All right. Hi, honey. How was your day?
It did,
didn't it? Oh. Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Well, the committee chair didn't get back to me about the brochure, so now I have extra time to work on it. The doctor never called about my test results, so everything must be okay. I don't have time to get the groceries, so let's go out to dinner.
A little different than the first one? Yeah? Yeah? Anybody want to identify with this one? We all do. Yeah, that's nice, right? Anybody want to guess what number that is?
A seven.
Yeah, joy, joy, joy. I've got that joy, joy, joy down in my heart, the seven, you know? It's all going to work out. I must be well. Let's go out to dinner. Okay, who wants to read the third? Okay, we're good. Hi, honey. How was your day?
Well, the committee chair didn't get back to me about the brochure. She really should have. The doctor never called me about my test results. I really think we should switch to a new doctor. I didn't have time to get the groceries. They never have enough cashiers, and the lines are way too long.
Different again, right? Different response. Same things happened. Different response. Anybody identify? Want to admit you identify? Anybody want to take a guess at number?
One.
One, yes. The perfectionist, right? The one who wants everything good. And that's not good. Nobody did what they wanted. They were supposed to do. They didn't follow the rules. Okay. The first one was four. Melancholy. Okay. The first one was a four. So every viewpoint, Richard Rohr says, is a view from one point. And that's what the Enneagram is all about, helping us find our one point from which we view the world. One of the reasons that the Enneagram is confusing to us is that it has to do with our blind spots. We don't know that we're doing what we're doing because it feels perfectly normal and right to us. After all, that's what we do. I don't always know what I'm doing when I'm doing it. I can't see what's wrong with my compulsions. I just want to help people. What's wrong with that? I'm just trying to be good and helpful all the time. How can that be wrong? How can that be bad? So our blind spots become like the log in our eye that Jesus speaks of in Matthew's gospel that we have to get out before we can help somebody else. So I know that the Enneagram is very compelling when it comes to identifying who, what number your spouse is or your child is or your father and mother are or whatever. And that's good. That's, you know, taking out the speck in the other person's eye. But we got to get that plank out first. We got to identify who we are and work on that before we can work on others. Our blind spots deter our spiritual growth and keep us away from God because we can't see how we are not being who God created us to be. We can't see how we're getting wrapped up in those obstacles that keep us from moving forward. Okay. So we had two different sets of three last week. The harmonic, we looked at two, the harmonic and the Hornavian. We're going to look at another one. And these are the centers that most people talk about when they talk about the centers of the Enneagram. Okay. The head, the heart, and the gut. So the head is the rational intelligence. People who operate out of their head operate out of thinking first. Get into a situation, the first thing automatically you go to your thoughts. How am I going to work this out? What needs to happen? How am I going to get this done? That computes. Everything is up here. The emotional social intelligence, the heart, goes right to feelings. And you feel your own feelings and you feel the feelings of everybody else that's involved. The heart has reasons that reason knows not of. And the somatic intelligence, the gut, goes by instinct. The body knows. These are the people that walk in a room and their gut just tells them this is a good place or, oh, this is bad, I don't want to be here. They know it. They don't know how to tell you they know it, but they know it. The heart feels it and the head is thinking about it. Okay? Three different centers. We all have a little bit of all three. We're not all one or the other, but there's one that we do more than the others. There's one that's automatic when we get into a new or a stressful situation. And then maybe we realize we need to pull on the others as well. So there they are in the Enneagram circle. The 8, the 9, and the 1 are the instinctive, the body, the gut type. And what they're seeking is autonomy. They want to be okay in this room that doesn't feel good, that they got this churning in their stomach over this situation. They don't want it to overpower them. They want autonomy, a sense of selfness. The 2, the 3, the 4, those are the heart or the feeling numbers. And they're looking for attention. They just want people to know they're there and know that it's a good thing that they're there. They'll go about it in different ways, but attention is what all three of those are seeking. And then the thinking, the head center, the 5, 6, and the 7 are all in their own way looking for security, looking to feel like it's okay, I'm safe, everything's going to be okay. So let's look at the emotional center, the heart, the 2, the 3, and the 4. So if you're wondering if you're one of those, this may help you figure that out. If 2, 3, and 4 came up for you last week, it's the relating instinct. The 2, the 3, and the 4 want to know, who am I with? Relationships are extremely important to this center. Again, we said they're concerned with attention, getting it more than giving it, although they want to give it in order to get it. They're seeking connections. They want to be one with other people. They can be open and compassionate and authentic when they're in their healthy state. They are among the ones who are the most aware of other people's feelings. They feel what someone else feels. They feel for them. They feel with them. Sometimes they don't even feel their own feelings. They just feel what the other person feels. In fact, they will often deny their own feelings and fail to notice them. They don't listen to their own heart. They sometimes don't worry about their needs, but the needs of others. Yes?
So can you remind me of the 2, 3, and 4, the names? The first screen,
the yes, it's the helper. There's so many names for them. The doer and the creative one. Okay? 2, 3, and 4. Okay? So I think there's another slide on this one too. Yes. So the heart center will ruminate about the past and what they did wrong. So if you kind of do that a lot, you might be a 2, 3, or a 4. And they'll plan how they'll impress people in the future. 2s, 3s, and 4s tend not to live in the now. They're either ruminating about the past or trying to figure out how they're going to get attention in the future. Rejection is extremely dangerous. They're really worried about being rejected. And any rejection, any time they feel like somebody else doesn't like them or doesn't appreciate them, it's because there's something wrong with them. Something wrong with me. Not wrong with the other person, but wrong with me. Emotions are anxiety played out in busyness. So the 2, 3, and 4 keep busy, keep doing. And they go straight from feeling to action. They feel it, they do it. Okay, there's no thought process in there, no sense of, you know, what am I feeling in my gut? Does this feel right or wrong? Just, oh, my heart, let me do it. Okay, not always bad, but sometimes it can be. They can feel responsible for the whole world, and they need to fix everybody and everything. If anybody's hurting, they've got to fix it. Their focus is on their self-image, their appearance, how things look. They seek attention and affirmation. They need the opinions of others, and they matter the most. It's not what I think. It's what do you think? Are you thinking this is good? Because I need to know, because it's not good unless you think it's good. And their feelings of being worthless and inadequate leads them to the emotion of the heart center, which is shame. So 2s, 3s, and 4s often feel a lot of shame, which can lead to some pretty yucky stuff, right? When you're filled with shame. Okay, the head center. Okay, if I only had a brain. It's the newest part of the brain, the neocortex. Their orienting instinct is, where am I? Now we're talking about the 5, the 6, and the 7. Okay. People in the intellectual center have a conversation in their heads. Everything's in the head. Their concern is with security. And they observe life. They can kind of be like a ways away. They're not engaged in life right away. They're kind of sitting back and thinking about it. Kind of sizing up the situation. And they want to take in information, put it in some kind of a rational order, and think about all the possibilities. So if you've ever been in a meeting with somebody and you're planning something and they're the ones that are coming up with all of the possibilities and wanting to think through every step of the process, you might be dealing with someone in the head center. They're constantly putting their own world in order. And it's never quite orderly enough, so they have to keep doing it, right? And their strategies, plans, and beliefs are the focus. And it may or may not lead to action, right? In the feeling center, it went feeling to action. In the head center, they'll think about it a whole lot and plan about it a whole lot, but it may not get them to actually do anything. Okay, you may be married to someone who who plans a lot of things, but you never seem to go on that vacation that they planned out, you know? You never seem to do whatever that plan was. Kind of never turns into action. So might be a head person because they're still thinking. Yeah, I have to think a little longer. Yeah, well, yeah, we could go there, but let's think about where else we could go because there might be a better place. Mm-hmm. They're idea people. Life is a puzzle and they want to solve it. They're great in a meeting, right? They're going to find the flaws. They're going to think it through. They're going to give you great ideas. Life is lived in their head. They live their lives in their head. They're inductive thinkers. They love to wonder, curious about everything, always open to learning new things. They fear not fitting in, and so they keep things hidden until it feels safe to let it out. They're not going to be the ones that are going to go to their feelings and tell you how they feel. They're going to keep thinking about it until they're sure that you're not going to reject them or hurt them. And then if there's real trust, they may actually tell you what they're thinking. They can feel forgotten and overlooked. Well, heck, they're not doing anything, right? They're just thinking. So how do you notice them, right? So, you know, they do something. Maybe we'll see you, right? They fear a lack of support and abandonment, which leads to their big emotion, which is fear. They live life, five, sixes, and sevens, in perpetual fear. Twos, threes, and fours were shame. It's their prominent emotion. Fear for this center. Okay, they're always afraid. Ready to go on to the gut, the somatic center? Their conserving instinct is how am I? Not who am I with, not where am I, but how am I? How does it feel in my gut? How's it doing? Their concern is with autonomy. And how do you know? You just know. You just got a gut instinct. You just know deep in your gut that this is a good place or this is a bad place. You walk into a room, you meet a new person, and your gut tells you this is going to be a friend or this is going to be a good place to be. All right? It'd be interesting to look at how the different numbers act when they first come to Transfiguration, right? Is it a gut thing? This place feels good. I'm going to stay. Or is it a head thing? Well, I'll have to think about this. I'll have to read more about the Episcopal Church. I'll have to read more about Transfiguration. I might have to go to five other churches and see what they think first. So I know I'm doing, you know. Or is it the heart thing? Do they need me? Can I help? Will they give me attention? Will I be important here? So the somatic center is grounded and vital and real and very oriented to the here and now. Where we said the heart is either ruminating about the past or thinking about the future, the gut person is in the here and now. What needs to happen right now, right here? How do I feel about it? What's happening in my body? Survival requires that they be in charge. They don't like to be, because that's the autonomy. They need to be in charge. They need to be have the say in things. And they give us our fundamental instinctual vitality. So we all need a little of this in us, right? And we all have a little of it. Their issues are with a loss of a sense of self. They can be very instinctive. They also can be very judgmental and opinionated because they've got a gut feeling and that's it. I'm right, you're wrong, because I felt it in my gut and I'm sticking to it. So you think something else? I'm sorry. I was right. I felt it. They think in metaphors and stories because they can't explain it, right? It's just a gut feeling. So it's like this and it's like that. They will tend to use metaphors and stories. They do lots of sorting and separating. They're always comparing. Can be black and white thinkers. I'm right. You're wrong. This is how it is because I felt it. Carry a lot of tension in their body. Because they're feeling everything in the gut. So their bodies are often in pain. They're carrying tension. They create boundaries between themselves and others. And they need to be strong and in control. Weakness is not an option for the 8, 9, and 1 in the somatic center. The 8, 9, and 1. And what is their emotion? Anger. Rage. Very deeply. They feel rage and anger. So, think a minute. Did any of them come close to describing some things about you? Some ways in which you might approach the world to give you just an idea of where you might be if you're still struggling with it? Or confirm where you thought you might be? I see some heads nodding. Yeah? Okay. So here's the periodic table of the Enneagram. So across the top we have from last week the Hornavians. Either the assertive, the compliant, or the withdrawing types. And down here, we have the three centers, the feeling center, the thinking center, and the instinctive gut center. Okay? So, if you remember from last week, whether you were assertive, compliant, or withdrawn, And if you now know whether you think you're from the feeling center, the thinking center, or the instinctive center, you might be able to locate yourself on the periodic table. So if you're a three, if you're assertive and feeling, you might be a three. And a three is assertive. They are in the feeling center. They have a lot of, they attach a lot of importance to competency. They want to do well. They want to be successful. They're planners. Attachment is important to them. They're motivators, and they demand attention. If you're compliant and in the feeling center, you might be a two. You might always want to be a helper, again, to earn attention. And if you're withdrawn in the feeling center, you might be a four because you're reactive and you're very creative. And there's kind of a melancholy about you and about life. If you're assertive and in the thinking center, you might be a seven, the enthusiast. Everything's joyful, everything's fun. Or a six, the loyalist. Always loyal until it's not good to be loyal anymore, then very worried about and very fearful. Or a five, if you're withdrawn and thinking, you're the one that's got books up all over the place and you have certificates all over your wall and you keep going back to school to learn more because you don't know quite enough to do whatever it is you're being asked to do. You got to know more, more and more and more. And you're always in your head wanting to know more. If you are assertive and a gut person, then you might be an eight, a challenger. Again, you're demanding autonomy like all the instinctive people are. But you're assertive about it, and you're reactive, and you do not like rejection. If you're a one, you are compliant and instinctive. Competency is important to you. Getting things right is important to you. Being the reformer, making things better, making things perfect, actually. Or you might be withdrawn and instinctive, and then you might be a nine. And a nine is the peacemaker. And sometimes, like I said, so much in peace that they fall asleep, right? This sloth. But they're positive. Attachment is important, but they're instinctive and they withdraw. Pull back. So, find yourself. See where you think you might be. Questions? Thoughts? Comments? Yes?
How often is it to be a mix?
Oh, we're all a mix. We're all a mix. Usually, though, there's one. I'll bring next week the website for a person that does a tri-type. So she says that we're something in feeling, thinking, and instinctive. We're in all three centers, but still there's one that dominates. So we may at times be gut, sometimes thinking, and sometimes feeling, but there's one that we go to most, especially when we're not thinking about it. So it's not when we're processing it and we're giving it a lot of thought and we're in control and, you know, we're getting into a situation and we're kind of prepared. It's when we get into something that wasn't expected and we just go on automatic pilot. That's when our primary number will pop out. But as we'll see in a minute, we're not all one number. We couldn't be. That would be very weird, right? We're a combination of a lot of things. But there's one that predominates. And like I think I said last week, if you're having trouble figuring yourself out between one or two of them, it's probably the one that makes you most uncomfortable, the one you don't want to be, the one that you said, ooh, ooh, yeah, that's me. Okay, so.
On that one, there was a circle. There was an order to that. In other words, there was.
Yes.
There was ones on the border and there was ones in the center. You know what I'm saying? The number starts here, and then there's one in the middle.
Yeah, so it's the one at the top is nine. Always nine, and then it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
So is there a relationship to being on the border between or versus being in the center of that circle? circle wedge.
We're all in the on the border when we start. I think the goal, because what happens is you move into a circle, you get closer to all the other points, right? If everybody's moving in, if we're all standing around here in a circle, and then we start to move in, eventually we're all going to be together, right? So the healthy person, the person that's trying to be well-rounded and whole, is trying to move towards the center so that they will have aspects of the best parts of all of those numbers that they can draw on and choose to do when they need them. They can pull from the different numbers. So yes, our spiritual growth is to move towards the center. How are we doing on time? So there's the Hornavian triad that we talked about earlier, the social types. And you see the three numbers that are kind of related. So if you're thinking that you're a 7, you have relationship with the 8 and the 3. There's things about you that are similar to the 8 and the 3. If you think you're a 5, there's similarities with you and the 4 and the 9. You're not totally different from everybody else. And then there was the harmonic triangle. So if you think you're a 7, okay, but you still have aspects of the 9 and the 2 because you're united around having the same way of trying to bring harmony to the world. Getting more complicated? And then you've got the 3 centers, right, where you're seeking either autonomy, and 8, 9s, and 1s are all doing that in their own different ways, or you're a 2, 3, and 4, and you're all trying to seek attention, but in all different ways, or you're a 5, 6, and a 7, and you're all trying to seek security, but you're doing that in different ways. So you've got relationships with people all over the circle, right? All over the circle. And then there's your wings. So if you're a 7, you've got an 8 wing and a 6 wing. They're sitting right next to you. So they have influence over you. You may take more from the 8 than the 6. You may be a 7 with an 8 wing. A lot of people will describe themselves, I'm a 7 with an 8 wing, or I'm a 5 with a 4 wing. Or you may feel that you borrow from both of your wings equally, and one doesn't overshadow the other. That's why it's not just enough to know what your number is. You got to know what all the numbers of the circle are to really be able to grow and develop. And then, where's the other? Okay, here it is. Then there's the arrows. You'll notice that in most Enneagram circles, there are arrows going away from you and an arrow going towards you. So if you're a 6, the arrow that is moving away from you is moving you to a 3, and the arrow that's coming at you is from the 6. You see that? Okay? So those influence us in this way. Let's say you're a dominant 9. But you're under stress, in a stressful situation. Think of something at work or something at home that's stressing you out. You will probably move and begin to develop some of the 6 attitudes and the 6 actions. You're going to want security, okay? You're going to move to the 6's need to make sure that everything's in place and you've thought it through and you're okay. But if you're a 9 and everything's going pretty good, and you're feeling in control of life, you might move to the 3. You might borrow from the good stuff of the 3, because the 3's very action-oriented and going to get things done and has goals. And so that slothful 9 is going to be a little less slothful because they're feeling pretty good about themselves. So they'll go and they'll get something done. They'll actually do something and get off the couch because they're feeling good. Okay, if they're feeling bad and they go to the 6, they're going to do even less than they did before, because not only are they slothful, but they also have to think about it. So each of the numbers has a number to which they go in stress and a number that comes to them in integration or when things are going well. So find your dominant number up there that you're thinking might be you, and you'll see that you have connections with another number to which you go in stress, and a number to which you go when things are going well and you're feeling like you got this and you're sitting on top of the world and life is good. So lots of ways that we interact with all the different numbers. So don't ever think that if you say you're a three, that's all you are. You're not. God didn't make us that one-dimensional, right? I would say that the example of someone who is fully all the numbers, fully in the center of the circle, who do you think that might be?
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. It's Jesus, yeah. Yeah. And so the more we put on the mind and heart of Christ, the more we move to take on the good parts of all the numbers and become whole. But we start out with one dominant gift that we're asked to share that gets us in trouble because we become addicted to it. And then we get out of whack and we need to work on getting back. And there they are again. So another way to see. So the arrow that is going away from your number is where you go in stress. And then the arrow that's coming towards you is what you receive in integration on the good days. And we receive and go to these different numbers at the level at which we are operating psychologically. Oh, there you go. So there's, if you wanted to be more, a little more confused. That's how all the, see how all the numbers get integrated and touch each other and it's all, okay. So we're not just one number. We're a compilation of a lot of things. But one thing dominates. So your number describes the part of you, which is also the best part of you, which is also the worst part of you. It's your gift, but it's also your shadow. Part of your growth is in knowing that shadow side. And then you can work on it when you know it. You can't get it can't be gotten rid of, but you can decide how you want to be. You're always going to be that number, but you can make choices about how you're going to be that number and how you're going to integrate other numbers. It is not an excuse for bad behavior. Well, I really can't help myself. You know I'm a two. So you'll just have to deal with it. That doesn't work. That doesn't work. We don't get off the hook. It's a wisdom to help you be who you were supposed to be, who God created you to be, who you want to be, the person that you would like to be, right? I think we're, okay, yeah, we're done. That's for next week. Okay, I have a slide somewhere that shows the levels. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, there it is. Okay. I don't know why I'm getting all of this, but this is why I came in at 8 o'clock this morning to get this right. Okay, there it is. All right. Oh, no, it isn't. It was, and then it went away? We'll save it for next week because I got to go in a minute. Maybe I can get it. Let me see. Let me see if I can get it to come back. I'm supposed to know what I'm doing now. I'm an expert, right? Wrong. There it is. Now, can I make it into a... Oh, that's why. All right. Well, let's unhide it. I was sure I unhid this one, but all right. Okay. Now, let's go from the currents. And then we have this crazy thing, and it's gone. Is it gone again?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I'm going to, whatever it comes back up to, I'm going to let it be. Right? Okay, if it comes up, there it is. Okay, I'm going to let it be. All right, so forget all that other stuff. We all have a personality type, right, our number, but we all have levels of that, levels of health in our functioning. Sometimes we're really on our game, sometimes we're not. Sometimes we even have some unhealthy stuff that goes on. I know it's very small. It would be bigger if I could get the whole screen. But 1, 2, and 3 are healthy levels. They're high functioning. They're when we're really on our game, when things are really going well, when we feel like we're in control of life and life is not controlling us. We're free from our habits and our ego mechanisms. Okay? Those are the top 3 levels. The average range are levels 4, 5, and 6. That's where we operate most of the time. We'd like to think we're all up here. The reality is most days, most of the time, we're average. And so some of our ego is getting in the way of us being who we want to be. We explode. We get kind of crosswise with people. We get down in the dumps. We feel melancholy. We feel like the world's against us. We kind of operate here. And then hopefully not too often, maybe never, we could even get down into the unhealthy ranges where we're dysfunctional, where we have destructive behavior patterns that hurt us and maybe hurt people around us. So when we're thinking about where we are on the Enneagram, we also have to think about where are we in the levels. So I may be a 9 or maybe a 5, but what level of that am I operating at, and how can I move up to a higher level, to a healthier level? How can knowing my number help me become even healthier in how I'm living? And when we go to our wings, or we go in the direction of one of those arrows, we go at the level we're operating. Does that make sense? So if I'm a 6 and in stress, I'm going to go to a 3. I'm not going to act like a healthy 3. If I'm an average 6, I'm going to act like an average 3. And I'm going to take on all the average characteristics of the 3. If I'm down here and I'm really in bad shape and I'm really not functioning well at all, and I'm a 6 and I'm stressed and I'm not doing well, I am going to go to that 3 in that same unhealthy place. I'm not going to all of a sudden be an above average person. I'm going to go at the level that I'm already at. So that matters too. We want to try as best we can, to the extent that we have control of it, to get up here whenever we can, because that's when we're our best selves and our truest selves, right? And some of us can do that. We can work on that, and most of us can. Sometimes we need help. So that's when we go to see a therapist or a coach, or maybe take some medication or whatever, when it's just too hard to do it on our own. We get help, and that's fine. That's what we should do. Go to a spiritual director, whatever. So that's what I wanted to tell you about today. And next week, we will get real into the 2 and the 3. We always start there. I always start there because it helps us to see the heart center first. I always just like to go to the heart center first and then move around that way. So we'll do the 2 and the 3 next week. What I'd like to suggest, because I'm going to be away the week after that, so it's the 23rd, that we just skip that week. And then we pick back up again. Is that okay with everybody? I could get somebody else to come in and teach it, but I'm selfish and jealous, and I don't want anybody else to teach you. What number is that? We'll figure that out. but I want to do it, so I'm going to see if that's all right with Mother Rebecca, and if so, then I'll tell you next week, but we'll probably skip the week after. Okay? We'll all get a break. All right. Thank you so much. See you next time. Yeah, that would be the wings.
Yeah, that's